And they kind of looked at me and they said the answer was alcohol.
Tom Caulfield, James Whittle.
This is the story of The Tempest 2.
So, ladies and gentlemen, The Tempest 2.
Welcome back to The Tempest 2 podcast. How's
Hello,
it going?
Everyone. Hope everyone is well. We are thrilled to be back on the Tempest 2 podcast, talking all things adventure, mindset, and anything else that comes to mind.
And most other things.
Most other things. But we are... Let's jump straight into it.
Yeah, sure thing. Why not?
Let's jump straight into the story of the moment. If you haven't heard of it, where have you been? The hardest geezer, Russ Cook, has completed his ambitious mission to run the length of Africa.
Ambitious, to say the least.
To say the least, he's done it. Fair play.
Fair play. We'll talk a little bit about this. We'll put 10 minutes into it, I reckon.
Okay, like it. But a hard stop on it.
Because it's one of those things, isn't it? We say quite a lot of the times when we think about planning adventures or the things that we've done, it's very good and useful to be able to capture the imagination of someone in a few words. So rowing across the Atlantic, you know, has that, oh shit, that's a long way. I understand that in a very short amount of time. Wicked. Running the length of Africa kind of is that exact same thing. It's, you don't need to ask many questions to know that that is a very long way and is going to be a very tough thing to do. And I'm not putting our row up there with what he's done. I think he is he's set the bar for a fucking massive adventure. And in the numbers, 9,940 miles is three times the length of the Atlantic that we rode, which is absolutely mental. And 352 days, which is 7 times the amount of the length of time we were out there.
It's like your little algebra brain going on.
So I hate to make this story about us.
Hey, let's talk about the Atlantic whilst we're here.
No, but it's an absolutely insane, insane thing to do. So yeah, 9,940 miles. He must be a little bit annoyed that he didn't get the 10,000 mile barrier.
I imagine those 60 miles may have killed the man.
Yeah, that's a very good point. There wasn't much left of him, was there?
I think what, you know, obviously the enormity of the physical and mental challenge is pretty obvious. And every podcast is going to talk about that for the next few months. And, you know, that is obviously something to behold. But I think what we should do is dig into, from our perspective, having done nothing as big as that, but in the realm of adventure.
Yeah.
Why this was so good, why it, as you said, caught the imagination, why it is basically set fire in the last couple of months. Because things like this happen, you know, semi-regularly and go completely unnoticed.
Yeah.
People do amazing things, big things, and you might see a couple of articles about it. But I think we should dig into why this was so good. And I'll kick off because, you know, he started a year ago, which is insane. And, you know, he's actually Russ Cook, the hardest geezer. This isn't his first kind of foray into this type of thing. He's actually done some pretty big stuff before. He was, you know, he's made a lot of YouTube content. He's locked himself in a coffin for a week. He's run through Asia. So he's obviously been trying to work on this kind of stuff to find the secret formula to what makes it a big success. And I think the biggest point of difference that he had and the real kind of unsung heroes of this entire adventure is the crew he had with him and the amount of time and effort that clearly went into creating not only good content, but very, very consistent, regular content for what was essentially a year, almost every day.
Yeah.
And that's kind of what has set him apart, I think, and what has like really allowed this story to grow and build momentum.
Yeah. Well, I think on that point, that it's one thing being able to record content, you know, 352 days in a row and pick up a camera and do the stuff which he did to Instagram, which people will recognize. You know, it's day 200 of running the entire length of Africa. That stuff was great. That like gained momentum massively. But the logistics of driving the entire length of Africa on the same roads that you can run on, it is something entirely different. And doing that, so they had a production guys there that planned the routes, the logistics, and then a film crew as well. So with that means you have to charge cameras, you know, clear SD cards. I think they did 20 plus YouTube videos. It might have been more. And over that time grew like over 200,000 subscribers on YouTube. So yeah, the physical feat of running nearly 10,000 miles is one thing, but they've essentially been running a business and a charity on the other side. I think raising nearly £1 million for charity is pretty special. And I think that little combination, as you said, is kind of what has made it work. But why do people follow along? Because there's still people who create content regularly whilst doing big things, and again, nothing comes from it. So what is it about the content or him that's worked?
It's him, isn't it? He is the epitome of like the everyman.
Yeah,
you know, he's this ginger lad from Worthing. He's a little bit fucking like, just, I mean, that's not the right accent at all. But
he's a geezer, isn't he? The name is perfect. And I remember at the beginning, all the comments were like, the thing that makes this the most incredible adventure of all time is that a ginger bloke is going to be in Africa for nearly a year, which is a very valid point.
Yeah. Yeah, and I think that's why it appealed to the masses, is because, you know, 90% of people in adventure are pretty like privileged. They're all pretty much the same. Oh yeah, like, you know, I did this and did that, and old Montgomery, you know, set the record, and it's all just a bit like old school British. Like, do you know what I mean? It's kind of that upper echelon. Oh yeah, of course. Of course, we'll go and explore and find this and all that kind of shit.
Yeah.
And suddenly you've got this bloke, and the way that he just was completely himself, like, made the whole thing not look easy, but just laughed off huge kind of obstacles and never really seemed to have a down day, or would never be downbeat or moaning on camera.
Yeah.
And that just became infectious, I think. People were just like, my God, this guy's an absolute beast.
Yeah, and he took everything with like the same attitude, didn't he? Whether he was smashing out like 100-kilometer days, which he did a couple of times, to when he got really ill at one point and was pissing blood. He got held up at gunpoint and they got all their passports nicked. And I think there would be a reaction that some people, like with a camera in their face or like recording stuff all the time, would feel like they had to give. And he was just pretty authentic the whole time, wasn't he? And I think whether he planned it or not, the YouTube stuff that he did, and he kind of ended up aligning himself with like good, very successful British YouTubers, like the Sidemen and stuff. I think just because of how he is, and that's probably helped. He's had some good brand partners and stuff on the way who have like talked about it a fair bit as well. So it's just a perfect storm, really. But being able to, because there were days when he went dark, as he said, where they had zero signal, couldn't post anything, and then he'd do like a multi-day upload. But I think when you do something regular like that, people always say, don't they, you know, to grow a social media following you have to be consistent and post regularly, which is like great, but like if the content's garbage, it's like it does the opposite. But when you're doing something as fucking full-on and interesting as that, it's people are gonna lap it up, aren't they? I remember I think I started following him, or we started following him, and there were like 5,000 followers.
Yeah.
It was probably day one. And then it's fucking obviously well and truly gone from there. But like you said, people do massive stuff and it goes unnoticed.
It's funny, I kept seeing tweets, especially in like the last few months, of being like, why isn't this getting the attention it deserves? Like at Sky News, at BBC, and you know, why aren't you picking this up? And I think people don't realize, like, as we said, this shit happens all the time, but most of the time people fail, they'll stop, you know. And I think there is a real risk when you big yourself up, big up a huge thing, we're going to go and do this and whatever. News places aren't interested until you've done it.
Yeah, exactly.
Because that's not news, is it? Man tries to run Africa but stopped because he got injured. Like, it's just no news there.
Yeah.
So the trajectory of his following in the last 4 weeks, especially, and the last 48 hours of it, was just like vertical.
Yeah.
That, like, it was like slow growth, then just a vertical kind of like hockey stick curve. And you know, he's well over 1 million followers on Instagram now. He'll be on Joe Rogan, he'll be on Stephen Bartlett, I'm sure. And I reckon it'll be up to 2 million in a couple of weeks. And like, he's set now. He's crushed it. He's absolutely crushed it. The question is, what does he do next? Does he try and do something else?
Probably.
Like, probably.
Yeah, he strikes me the type of person who won't stop. He'll just do something else that's hard. whatever it is.
The thing that blew my mind, and I made the incorrect assumption that, you know, my thought was, oh, how nice must it be just to be able to fuck off for a year? Like, he must be single. He must not be leaving a huge amount behind. I mean, he's from Worthing. I've been to Worthing and I'd never go back. but like, it must be, I always thought, oh, it must be nice just to walk away for a year and have no, you know, ties. But he's got a girlfriend.
Yeah.
I couldn't believe that. How has he got sign off for a year?
I think he's gone, this is happening. And she's probably gone, no, right, you know, whatever. And then realized it's gone pretty big and gone like, yeah.
Yeah, that like impressed me even more, because he's clearly like, he's stepped away from a relationship for a year.
Yeah, same with all the film crew and the production guys. You know, they've all been in it for the whole time as well. It's, yeah, it's pretty impressive. But it doesn't go without its controversy, does it? I think it was about 2 hours after he finished and people were celebrating him that someone came out and said, that's already been done, actually. You're not the first person to run the length of Africa. And I actually think this happens loads in adventure, exploration. Everyone is trying to do something that's not been done before, like world first. And now it's kind of to the point that really a lot of the big stuff has been done. Comes down to nuance, basically, of, yeah, but I did it on this bike, I did it on this boat, or I went this direction and stuff. And it kind of holds it back a little bit, like dumbs down the achievement. But what was the deal? So was it a Danish bloke has already ran the length of Africa, apparently? Is that right? Or the World Runners Association?
Yeah. Some little board of Karens came out being like, actually, you know, this Danish bloke did it 20 years ago. But I think the difference was the route was different. So this bloke, I mean, and this is a perfect example. No one knows who he is.
Yeah.
Because, you know, he didn't talk about it. There's a couple of articles that we found, but no big fanfare. He ran from Cape Town to Cairo.
Right.
And, you know, we were looking at the map earlier, weren't we? I think that route traditionally is where, you know, Egypt borders Israel, especially the back door of Africa moving into like the Middle East.
Yeah.
So, you know, technically you've run the continent, but the hardest geezer ran south tip to north tip, furthest possible distance as the crow flies. Yeah. So I guess, again, it's a technicality, isn't it? You know, on paper, technically, that Danish guy's done it. But I did notice after those little bits of like controversy came out, all of their wording kind of changed. Rather than running Africa, it was like running the full length of Africa.
Yeah.
So again, it's just like, oh, a bit of wording. It doesn't diminish what he's done in any way, but adventure is so, so fixated on world firsts.
Yeah.
Everest, North Pole, South Pole, you know, all the big ones are done. I don't think there are really any remaining ones. There's a couple of peaks that haven't been climbed, but they're in China, so you're not allowed to climb them.
Yeah.
You know, you can fly first class to either pole. Everything's been done that has, you know, could be done. So
Exactly.
I think that it then it just becomes the fastest, doesn't it? Then it's a race to do things quicker than everyone else.
Yeah, exactly.
But like another example is someone we spoke briefly about, Sean Conway, didn't he? He did 104 full Ironman back to back.
Yeah.
You know, that is staggering, a staggering achievement. But like nothing's really gone on about it. A couple of articles, and it's just all faded away. So it's such a tough thing. Like, you can't go into it trying to be famous, because
you've got to do it for yourself.
Yeah, for sure. Because you're going to be let down 90% of the time, I reckon.
Exactly. Like, imagine Sean Conway, if he'd done that, the plan being like, right, this is going to be what takes me to the moon. And then he's like 75 Ironmen in, Ironmans, 75 days in.
Ironmans.
And it's just like, I've picked up 11 followers. You wouldn't do it, would you? But you've got to have something else. Maybe you've got to be a little bit tapped to do that many Iron Thems in that amount of days. I like that. I think they should rebrand. Iron Them is good.
Iron Them. They're going to have to soon, aren't they?
Iron Them what? Iron Them clothes? Yeah, I mean, God's sake. Sorry. But it led us down a bit of a rabbit hole, didn't it? We were looking at, you know, as we do our intense research for this podcast, we had up on Google Maps the Africa and Cairo and where that is. And then we got a bit sidetracked and started zooming in on compounds and villages in Yemen. But how mental is it? I mean, we've planned an adventure on Google Maps. In Patagonia, which is absolutely hilarious, zooming in on the La Leona River, was it? Is that what it was called?
Oh, yeah.
I mean, what a piece of technology.
If you actually sit there and think about what you're doing, it's mental. Like, we zoomed in on this little tiny hut in the middle of nowhere. Yeah, you are in Yemen. And there's a little bloke sat in there, just like, oh, here I am in Yemen. And we're just sat here talking about him on a podcast.
It's like, be more Middle Eastern, be more English. Like, podcasting about some bloke salmon fishing in the Yemen. Just amazing.
Yeah. But yeah, when we planned an entire adventure using Google Earth, it did go wrong, actually, because the road wasn't there.
Yeah,
the river wasn't there. The river was not actually what we thought it was, so wouldn't recommend it.
Yeah, the Google Maps, one thing it doesn't show is the speed and velocity of rapids, which is not good. Right, I've got a question for you.
Okay, good stuff.
Based off Hardest Geezer's route, I'm going to list the countries that he ran through, and then I'm going to ask you a question. So he visited South Africa, Namibia, Angola, Democratic Republic of the Congo, Republic of Congo, Cameroon, Nigeria, Benin, Togo, Ghana, Ivory Coast, Guinea, Senegal, Mauritania, Algeria, and Tunisia. My question for you is,
which
country would you most... No, we know the answer to that one. Least likely to visit.
South Africa.
least likely to run through, not visit. That's his mental.
I mean, it's a bad question, because my knowledge of any of them is so limited. I'm going to base it off pure prejudice.
That's fair point. Blood Diamond.
Yeah, I mean, Republic of Congo just sounds scary as fuck, right? Like, I just imagine a ripping civil war that I'm going to run through.
I actually think you might be right.
Okay, perfect. There you go.
Okay, so that's a good answer. I'm going to say the same. Okay, thank you. Let's move on.
Okay, good stuff.
Sorry, I'm pulling up my notes here, and we are going to move. But first, I guess let's just say, what would you call that massive adventure? I don't know if adventure does it. This is with the next section in mind, which has a name. What is that? What is that he's done? Is it just a fucking...
I, I I toy with this in my head because there is a difference. However, I think because of where he ran through, it does tick the adventure box. It's an endurance feat, isn't it, really?
Definitely.
But because he's gone through deserts and jungles and stuff, I think it's definitely, there is a big adventure element in there. For me, yeah. Like, there is a difference between doing 104 I and Them back to back and going to a far flung exotic destination that only 20 people have been to. That's adventure for me. It's like seeing parts of the world that are hard to get to. And I think I was actually thinking this last night, weirdly, that tourism is kind of removing this mystique from those places. You know, the top of Everest, pretty much anyone can pay to do that. The poles you can fly first class to, and the whole kind of, I guess, the element of adventure that's tied with these places is the fact that you have to go through something really difficult to see them. And that's kind of being diminished now more and more, isn't it?
Yeah, it goes back to the classic thing that we discuss and talk about a lot, and that is like adventure is so subjective, and so many people call themselves adventurers because they, you know, go to the Maldives on holiday or visit Madeira, you know, in October. It was but it's classic, isn't it? So I think we should work on our definition of adventure, because I think you're right. I think it's going somewhere new, like, but it has to be in a way that is challenging, because you can, you know, adventure travel is massive now, isn't it? Absolutely massive. And like you said, you can sail anywhere, fly anywhere, get your bags carried anywhere if you wanted to and you had enough money. So I think, is that still adventure?
There's a difference between, oh, we had an adventure, to I am going on an adventure.
Yeah.
Yeah. I'm not clever enough to know the difference between those two words and their context.
Yeah, me neither. But we'll call it that. Well, it's like that company we were looking at, who they organise like adventures for people, but you're turning up. You're like, I think it was on Little Monkey Scrambler motorbikes.
Oh yeah.
And you spend 10 days or so like bombing through the Sahara on these little monkey bikes. You know, is that an adventure? Yeah, probably is. But of like,
yeah,
a,
yeah.
It's like there's just levels to it, I suppose, isn't there? Or different entries. So that's why I'm saying is like the hardest geezer thing is like the tip top of that same word that can also mean,
yeah,
going on a weekend away. You know, that's advertised as an adventure or something. That's what's wrong with it.
Yeah, adventure's everywhere, you know?
Exactly. And on that note, speaking of everywhere, we're going to take the next section. We're going to go to Japan.
Here we are. Yeah, konnichiwa.
Konnichiwa. We're going to talk about something that seems to be gaining a little bit of momentum. It might just be in our small little bubble of a world. but that is something called misogis.
It definitely is.
is it gaining momentum or in our bubble?
100% in our group of four friends, nowhere else.
Right. Okay. Well, in that case, let's introduce the concept and maybe not assume that everyone knows what we're talking about, which is exactly what I was going to do. So the very, very top line. I'll give the initial, original kind of meaning, and then we can go to like how it's been westernized and moved into something that's a bit more applicable and relevant for us probably. But misogi originally is a water cleansing and an ancient Japanese practice that's all about purifying the mind and body, and it basically is a samurai tradition that was all for them to build mental clarity and get an understanding of themselves. And it is essentially based around hiking for days to get to an ice cold waterfall and doing this water cleansing sort of ritual on an annual basis. And what it's kind of evolved to is not necessarily the like the way of doing it, like the waterfall thing, but using the same principles of doing something really hard that can cleanse your mind, like bring some mental clarity and like be something of significant importance to your year, I suppose. With that, I'll hand it over to you.
Yeah, I think you've nailed it there. I think it's basically a fancy Japanese word for what we've been talking about for 10 years.
Yeah.
And that is there is an enormous benefit to setting yourself one massive goal every year. And I think in its simplest form, this is why people are obsessed with marathons.
Yeah.
Why marathons are so popular, that it's a really kind of understood way of pushing a normal person to their absolute limits in a safe, accessible way. And I think, you know, people that do marathons, that is definitely a form of a misogi. You could, you know, travel on your own for, you know, a few months. You could cycle to Paris, whatever it is. Like, again, it's subjective. It's dependent on your ability and your kind of framework. But it was kind of brought into, I guess, the public eye more so by a guy called Jesse Itzler, who we spoke about him ages and ages ago. He was the guy that wrote the book about living with a seal, where he, you know, David Goggins lived with him for a month and basically killed him every day. super interesting bloke. Very, very successful entrepreneur. His wife is the founder of Spanx, so they're absolutely caked up with cash. But
irrelevant.
yeah. I mean, yes, but no.
No. It definitely helps.
His misogis are like big boy, and he basically pays for a group of his mates to go and do them every year.
Yeah.
Which, what an awesome thing to do, by the way.
Yeah.
So they've, you know, cycled across the US. They recently did the rim to rim to rim, which is down and up and down and up the Grand Canyon. So just these big, like, hard events. And I think there's definitely something, and I also think there's something for us here to try and bring people along for like a misogi, like organize an event that people can do. I'm really like interested in that idea. And we mentioned it very briefly in the last episode with this app that we have, that we could create this fucking hard adventure and bring people in on it. And I think the rules of a misogi are pretty blurred, but it's very much like you do one big thing that sets you up for the rest of the year. There has to be a 50% or more chance of failure.
Yeah.
You know, you have to, like, when you're doing it, it's not fun. It's not like, oh, this is, what a great day out this is. It's, you are burying yourself. And I think there's a really, there is a big movement towards this. There's no doubt about it. I was joking before. Like, people are understanding that we spend 99% of our lives staring at our phones or sat at a desk or an aircon, and we are soft as an entire generation in the Western world. Soft people.
Yeah.
And there's definitely something to be said about adding a bit of calluses to body and mind.
Yeah, I like the thought of, you look back in, say, like 10 years down the line, and you look back at the 10 years, if you've got something significant that you've done every year, almost like, well, I remember, you know, 2021 was the year that I did this, and 22 was the year I did this, and so many people can look back on 10 years and not have anything significant in that, because they've just kind of ticked through and gone on holidays, done bits and pieces. So being able to almost write these little chapters in your own little book is a pretty cool way of doing it. I think I'm on Jesse Itzler's Instagram now, actually, and he's given, just if people are like, yeah, but what, you know, what could that be? He's got a list of about 100 ideas, and it ranges from things that you might find easy to things that are a bit more challenging. But yeah, completing ultra marathons to writing a book to climbing a mountain to, you know, leaving your job and finally going freelance, going on a certain amount of flights, visiting this place. So some of them seem much more accessible than others. But I think the premise of it, as you said, is just to get out there and do something. And I think, you know, some of the things that we've done are, you know, maybe don't fall in the misogi thing, because it's taken too long to kind of train for. Maybe the chance of failure is a bit higher. But I kind of like the bracket that it should be in, this type two fun. So it may not always be enjoyable as you're doing it, but when you look back on it, it's something that you look fondly on. And that's kind of what a lot of our adventures are kind of all about. I actually saw a great diagram about that, those different types of fun, that made me think about our trips and about what we plan on doing going forward. And it was like type one fun is fun in the moment, relatively forgettable, but like something you want to do more of. Type two fun, not necessarily fun in the moment, but afterwards you're like, oh, that was actually great. You know, that was leaves a lasting impression in your memory. And then type three fun is wasn't fun at the moment, at the time. And in hindsight, you know, you wish it had never happened, but it makes for a fucking amazing story. And that actually having a blend
of you with them,
having a blend of those three types of fun is kind of the key to an amazing adventure. Like for example, some of the calamities on El Cap, where maybe I wasn't clipped in at a certain time or you nearly fell off the rope. That's very much a type three fun sort of thing. Like, yes. It's not fun at the time. It's not fun afterwards. You're like, well, we fluked that. You know, we got away with that. But it's a very good story. So maybe avoid the type three stuff a bit more. But having the Misogis as like a type two fun thing or type one, type two fun to aim for is quite a good measure, because that way, you know, some people that find running an ultra marathon in type one or type two fun, that'll be horrendous for some people and out of their stretch. So I think people will know what works for them. But I'd love to organize something that is adventure based and gets people amongst, you know, doing something very different and well outside of their comfort zone. And yeah, that'd be an amazing thing to try and do.
Yeah. I think why don't we set ourselves a challenge, and it'd be good to probably get some like input from people that follow us on nothing like made, but something we could do locally, you know, maybe next month.
Yeah.
Something that, you know, can be done in the UK. It doesn't cost thousands of pounds to do. You don't need loads of equipment. You can do it in, let's say, 24 hours. But maybe we'll put out on our Instagram a bit of a call to say, right, let's have some ideas for that. We can then go and do it. Other people can go and do it as well. And we can just start maybe building a bit of a, I don't know, a few case studies around this this Misogi idea, yeah, and maybe build towards a bigger thing.
Yeah, that sounds good to me. That sounds very good to me.
I wanted to wrap up on a cliffhanger.
Oh, right, okay.
We are exploring an idea for our next adventure.
Oh, I see where you're going with this. Yes, we are.
And holy smokes, it's big.
all I'm saying is konnichiwa. That's all I'm saying.
Konnichiwa.
No, it's not in Japan. It's not in Japan. I just wanted to say it. Yeah, no, we've been looking. Oh, well, obviously we're not going to share what it is, but it's worth saying that it's the, you know, foreseeable amount of the near future is going to be spent in pure research mode. That's how like far away from it we are at the moment and how outside of our realm of understanding and knowledge it is, which is scary and exciting at the same time.
Yes, here we go.
Stay tuned.
Amazing. Well, thanks for listening, guys, if you made it this far, and we'll be back again in a couple of weeks.
Thank you, guys. Have a great weekend. Enjoy the Masters.
Ciao, ciao.
Bye-bye.